Welcome to All Sides with Ann Fisher. It's doubtful now that Ohio voters will get a chance in November to reconsider the state's constitutional amendment banning same-sex marriage. Meanwhile, related issues continue to press the courts, and court rulings tend to be the news of the day when it comes to LGBT issues in general. Most recently, U.S. District Judge Tim Black ordered Ohio to recognize the legality of gay couples who had married in other states. Black last week stayed his ruling, pending an appeal, but the stay exempts the four gay couples who sued to force the state health department to list both parents on their children's birth certificates. And there's more. Joining us in the studio today to get started is OSU law professor Mark Spindelman. Welcome back to the show.
Thanks for having me on.
And listeners, what do you think? The issue is, should the law on same-sex marriage be decided by the courts, or should the voters decide? Give us a call and let us know what you think. 614-292-8513. There's a third option, of course, and that's the legislature. In Ohio, it's highly unlikely. But if you think that that's the other option and that's what works for you, you can also weigh in. You can email us at allsides@wosu.org or tweet us at @WOSUAllSides. Mark, in his recent ruling on the birth certificate case, Judge Black said that Ohio's refusal to recognize gay marriage is a violation of constitutional rights and unenforceable in all circumstances. In referencing all circumstances, is that opening a big fat barn door?
Well, so let me just give a little bit of context very quickly.
Sure.
For what Judge Black did. There are two different kinds of cases that are coming out. One kind of case is a recognition case, which is the kind of case that Judge Black has now decided. Twice recently and then an earlier case. But there are also cases that Judge Black refers to as celebration cases. The difference between the recognition and the celebration cases is that the recognition cases are involving same-sex couples who go out of the state of Ohio, who get married out of Ohio in a jurisdiction that recognizes same-sex marriage, and then come back to Ohio and are asking the state of Ohio to recognize their lawful out-of-state marriages. Those cases are seen by some, including by Judge Black, as being importantly different from celebration cases, which are cases involving, in the state of Ohio, the case would be a case involving the claim that the state of Ohio itself, as an initial matter, must allow a same-sex couple to celebrate marriage under Ohio law. So these cases are marriage recognition cases, and they're involving couples who have lawfully married out of state. And if they were cross-sex couples, if they were straight couples, and came back to Ohio, the presumption is that they would have been their marriages would have been recognized. And what they're saying is we have a right to have our marriages recognized by the state of Ohio on the same terms as cross-sex couples do.
Okay, so he when he says the refusal to recognize
yeah.
gay marriage is a violation of constitutional rights and unenforceable in all circumstances, is that all circumstances important there?
Yeah. Okay, go back to the question from before. So yes, it is important because initially it looked like the cases might only involve particular kinds of rights, benefits, or privileges under state law. So the earlier case involved death certificates. This one involves birth certificates. And it might have been the case that Judge Black limited his reasoning to those particular facts so that the marriage ban was seen as unconstitutional insofar as it blocked same-sex couples from being recognized on death certificates or same-sex marriages from being recognized on birth certificates. By saying the way that he does, Ohio's marriage recognition bans are facially unconstitutional and unenforceable under any circumstances, it means just that the state has an obligation, consistent with his reasoning, to recognize valid out-of-state same-sex marriages for all state law purposes, not just for purposes of death certificates, not just for purposes of birth certificates.
You're listening to All Sides with Ann Fisher on 89.7 NPR News. My guest is OSU law professor Mark Spindelman. Coming up, we are going to hear from the Cincinnati organization Citizens for Community Values. Later on, we'll hear from LAMBA Legal about, you know, more of a, to get more of a national perspective on all the issues, all the same-sex marriage issues or iterations facing the courts right now. If you have a question or comment, you can give us a call, 614-292-8513. So let's go back to that celebration thing for just a second. Is that, would an example of that be people who want to rent the Statehouse atrium for a wedding?
So what they're really talking about in celebration cases, and they go by different names, but the idea is that the state of Ohio has to recognize and allow same-sex marriage itself, not simply approve or not discriminate against same-sex couples who've been lawfully married out of state. So the idea there would be you can get married in Ohio under Ohio law rather than having to be out of state and married in another jurisdiction that recognizes it. So that's that's what those celebration cases really typically involve.
Ohio Attorney General Mike DeWine asked Black to stay his order while the state appeals the case to the U.S. Sixth Circuit Court of Appeals in Cincinnati. The appeal likely will take months. What's the usual course for this process? And what about the death certificates case? Is that working through the same appeals process?
Yep. So so the case goes up. There's briefing. Eventually, the court hears arguments, considers the case, and then issues a ruling. So the earlier death certificate case is in the process of being briefed as we speak. I've had occasion to read some of the briefs, but not all of them that have been filed in the case. And so the same thing will happen here. Judge Black's decision will go up to the Sixth Circuit. Sixth Circuit will consider the arguments that have been presented, consider Judge Black's decision, and then make a ruling.
By not narrowing his ruling to the specific issue of birth certificates, and by saying unenforceable in all circumstances, does that affect the process or the length of the process of the appeals?
So it doesn't affect the length of the process of the appeals, but what it does affect potentially is how the Court of Appeals might consider the issue. So, but the truth of the matter here is even the earlier decision, speaking only to death certificates, was a decision whose the reasoning of which went beyond just the death certificates case or question. And some evidence of that is that Judge Black's more recent decision involving birth certificates builds on the reasoning, the logic, the lines of analysis laid down in the earlier decision to conclude that it's not just in the narrow context of death certificates or the narrow context of birth certificates, but under any circumstances that the failure to recognize valid out-of-state marriages has to fall.
Is there anything distinctive about Judge Black's ruling that affects cases pending in other states, anything beyond Ohio?
Part of what's significant about the ruling is that Judge Black is joining a number of other district court judges across the country. I mean, Judge Black's opinion speaks of the emerging national consensus among federal judges about the meaning of various constitutional provisions as they relate to marriage equality, both on the recognition side and on the celebration side. So it's significant in being an important part in a swing state like Ohio of a national conversation and a national trend of federal judges who, since the Supreme Court's decision last year striking down an important part of the Federal Defense of Marriage Act in a case called United States against Windsor, a wave of district court decisions that have taken Windsor and, in a sense, understood its terms not to be limited to federal marriage recognition.
And talk about Windsor again and the significance.
So Windsor involved, in a sense, it was a marriage that was valid under the state under the laws of the state of New York that the federal government, under the provision of the Federal Defense of Marriage Act, was refusing to recognize. And the Supreme Court struck down this provision of the Federal Defense of Marriage Act on the grounds that the federal government didn't have good reasons for failing to treat married couples the same, regardless of the sex of the parties to the marriage. So the idea was a cross-sex couple married in New York would have been treated as married for purposes of federal law. This provision of the Federal Defense of Marriage Act blocked the federal government from treating same-sex couples the same way. And the Supreme Court said this kind of unequal treatment without a good constitutionally adequate justification is impermissible. What's interesting about the marriage recognition cases that have been before Judge Black is that they present a kind of state analog to that case. So the idea is, If a married couple is a cross-sex couple and they get married out of state and they come back to Ohio and their marriage is recognized, the claim here is that the mere fact that a couple happens to be same-sexed, same-sex couple, shouldn't be the basis for differential treatment. And there are various lines of argument that Judge Black embraces to support that conclusion. But the idea here is, just like the federal government doesn't have a constitutionally adequate reason to differentiate between married couples, lawfully married, depending on the sex of the parties to them, whether the marriage is cross-sex or same-sex. Neither does the state of Ohio have a good reason, according to the arguments and now according to Judge Black, for differentiating between or among couples based on whether they're cross-sex or same-sex.
The birth certificate case is one of three pending cases involving legally married gay couples seeking governmental rights in Ohio. In December, Black ruled that public officials must recognize same-sex marriages when issuing death certificates in Ohio, which is being appealed, as we mentioned earlier. In another case before Black now, a legally married gay couple is suing the Ohio Department of Taxation for the right to file a joint tax return. And I'm not exactly sure where this case is, but he did last week or earlier this week denied the couple's request for a temporary restraining order. Bottom line is, though, is that it seems to be coming at every stage of life now. There's all in it. It does. It's an interesting relief, if you will, of how laws affect us and how they affect us at every stage of our life.
Birth, death, taxes.
Taxes, right.
Well, I mean, look, it's you're absolutely right about this. Part of, I think, what's significant about it is, in a sense, it just underscores the arguments that are being made at a constitutional level, that same-sex couples have the same joys, have the same grief, and then have around taxes the same experiences, misery or not, call it what you will, that cross-sex couples do. And it just really underscores, in a sense, how just like cross-sex couples, same-sex couples are.
My guest, Mark Spindleman, OSU law professor. We're talking about the cases before the courts in Ohio and across the country later on that apply to the issue of same-sex marriage. Coming up, we're going to hear from a spokesperson for Citizens for Community Values. That's the organization that led the charge for the voter-approved ballot issue that banned same-sex marriage in Ohio in 2004. We'll return. This is All Sides with Ann Fisher on 89.7 NPR News. Welcome back to All Sides. I'm Ann Fisher. In all, same-sex marriage is recognized in 17 states and the District of Columbia. 33 states have banned same-sex marriage either by passing a statute or, as in the case of Ohio, enacting a constitutional amendment banning it. Ohio Senator Rob Portman recently said that instead of the courts, he would rather the voters decide same-sex marriage issues in the states. Meanwhile, the courts continue to juggle a growing array of same-sex marriage issues, from birth certificates to death certificates. Still with us in the studio today is OSU law professor Mark Spindleman. And joining us by phone from Cincinnati is Charles Tassel of Citizens for Community Values. Citizens for Community Values is the organization that led the charge for the voter-approved ballot issue that banned same-sex marriage in Ohio in 2004. Welcome to the show, Charles.
Thank you. Appreciate being there.
I'd like to hear from our listeners. What do you think, listeners? Should the law be decided by the courts? Should the voters decide? Should the legislature decide? Give us a call and tell us what you think. 614-292-8513 or email us at allsides@wosu.org. Charles, Phil Burris, the leader of CCV, called Judge Black's decision shockingly intolerant. Could you explain why he used those words?
Well, to immediately, and as Judge Black said, the will of the people is specious. Whenever there's a ruling or a judging by the people, in other words, when there's voting done, that is specious. He questioned the very fact that people are voting for something and said that's in and of itself questionable. That is an amazing attack on our whole system. You know, even to the step of the foundation of the Constitution, the ability to come together to vote and to come together to have a choice, that attack at that level was really a questioning of our whole system in general. And that's why Phil came out and started addressing the judge's statements that way.
Mark Spindleman, it is unusual for a ruling in a case like this to be so apparently uncognizant of the feelings of others in the process in our republic.
So let me just say about that. I can understand a sense in which it might be that Judge Black's opinion is seen to be intolerant along certain lines. The decision does narrow the field of political operation of views here, traditional views about marriage, saying that Ohio's marriage equality bans have to give way to constitutional norms, at least in the marriage recognition context. So I can understand it on that level. I can also understand the sense in which it might seem as though Judge Black's opinion is hostile to democratic and popular deliberation about the meaning and scope of traditional marriage and whether it should give way to marriage equality. But I just want to put the language speciousness in context, if I could, just to read the sentence in which it appears. In particular, Judge Black writes, the court notes that given all that all practicing attorneys, as well as the vast majority of all citizens in this country, are fully aware that unconstitutional laws cannot stand, even when passed by popular vote. Dependent's repeated appeal to the purportedly sacred nature of the will of Ohio voters is particularly specious. I take it that what Judge Black is saying here in this context is that given that he has held that there is a right, in a sense, to marriage recognition on different grounds that's constitutionally protected, the existence of that right isn't and shouldn't be subject to popular vote. That's I take it, what Judge Black's view is. Now, that's a contestable, there's a contestable assumption and contested assumption built into that, that there is a constitutional, that there are constitutional protections for these out-of-state same-sex marriages. But given that premise, I can at least understand, and I take it that that's what Judge Black is talking about when he's talking about sort of why the will of the voters can't stand here.
Charles Tassel?
Sure. Go ahead.
No, you go ahead.
Okay. Well, I was gonna say, I appreciate the Mark being an apologist for the judge on that and very clearly stating the point that the judge is creating really out of whole cloth, a new right, which is where I think the discussion should be focused at, which is there a right to marriage for a group that does not have a state interest, and the state have an interest in having that group there and being protected? And really looking at, in the terms of, what is the purpose of marriage? And as was mentioned, this is a government creation to create a marriage for same-sex couples that hasn't existed before. It hasn't existed throughout societies, throughout traditions. To merely call marriage traditional is to not recognize that there is no equal to marriage. Marriage has no equal. So we can put all this PR around it, and we can put all kinds of, as we say, government support around it and create it. But the fact remains that there is a government interest in male-female marriage that should not and cannot be overridden.
What's the government interest in male-female marriage?
It comes down to the basics of progeny. This is as simple as, in one sense, and I say simple, but there are multiple steps to it, which is child care, making sure that the biological mother and the biological father are involved in the parenting of the child, which provides for the society overall. The state has a very strong interest. I believe the actual state constitution says a strong public policy position on marriage. And the reason for that is it's proven over 10,000 different studies that children do better when they are with a mother and a father, especially when the mother and father are both involved biologically from the beginning of the child all the way to the end. So this is, and by end, I don't mean just 18 years old and out the door or up into college, all the way through inheritance. That is a process that the state says this is a priority. And one of the things that was discussed in some of the different briefs that have gone on this is there is an interesting point that we look at in male-female relationships, and that is unexpected pregnancy. That does not occur in same-sex couples. The state has an extreme interest in making sure that unexpected pregnancies are protected, taken care of, and addressed. That is not the same risk in same-sex couples. In fact, it's not a risk at all because it cannot happen.
If the state, if it's a public policy, if there's that government interest in male-female marriage, and it's because of progeny, and there are unexpected marriages, then why doesn't, I mean, wouldn't it follow that then the state should force people to get married to give that child the best upbringing? I'm not sure I'm following you.
Well, the law is for marriage, and that is the status quo to set out there to say, this is the standard. This is really the gold standard when it comes to families. Mm-hmm. Having marriage, having a mother, the father, biologically related to the children, and then raising them. And that's staying in a stable context.
So
that's, go ahead. You mentioned about forcing marriage.
Yeah, if it's a state interest that a child be raised in such a marriage as you described, then what stops the state from forcing people to get married?
Well, I can say.
Because a lot of people don't anymore these days, as you well know.
Well, and honestly, that's one of the things that, I'll kind of look at it from a different perspective, if you'll give me a second here.
Sure.
If we look at it from, there's a lot of discussion around Medicare, Medicaid, let's get the correct terminology, Medicare. Mm-hmm. When it comes to incentivizing single parents and that the government is incentivizing a situation which even President Obama referred to in his fatherhood speech and said, you know, we need to have the parents both involved. We need to look at how our system is putting incentives out there to incentivize single parents. Now, that's not to denigrate single parents. My father passed away when I was young, and my mom was a single mother for a while. You know, I don't denigrate that at all, but the ideal situation, and I can tell you from my own life, is having both the mother and father involved in the children and the rearing of the children. So that's where it comes to when you start looking at the government side of it. We look at the expansive use of welfare and in incentivizing systematically of single parents and recognizing that that's a bad thing. That is not a good thing in our society to incentivize single parents. So if we look at it and say, okay, if we're going to hold up marriage and say, well, does it mean something? Does it have value in our society? Is it really the gold standard? Or does it just mean anything? And we end up like some European countries where all marriage is accepted, all marriage is acknowledged, and marriage means nothing. And pretty soon, nobody gets married. There's no stability. Hmm. Mothers and fathers are not participating in the rearing of their children. And you have really what comes a breakdown of society.
You're listening to All Sides with Dan Fisher on 89.7 NPR News. Mark Spindleman, let's talk about that government interest in marriage. Mm-hmm. Can you talk about it from?
Sure. So
where you sit?
So I take it that part of the idea here is that the distinctiveness of cross-sex couples and a capacity and sort of what's ordinarily a capacity to procreate is thought to be a kind of biological distinction between cross-sex couples and same-sex couples. The idea being that that biological distinction or the distinctiveness of heterosexual couples and coupling with the ordinary capacity to reproduce is a basis for thinking that cross-sex and same-sex couples are not similarly situated for purposes of being treated equally under the law, including as a matter of constitutional requirement. So the idea is you must treat same-sex couples like cross-sex couples if they're like cross-sex couples, but not if they're not. And the idea here is that they're not, because same-sex couples don't naturally procreate. Okay, so that argument is an argument that earlier court decisions recognized as a valid basis for not extending marriage equality rights to same-sex couples. The problem as a constitutional matter is that the Supreme Court in Windsor didn't give that argument much heed, and in fact turned the argument of and around children and the future and procreation around to say that, as Judge Black's opinion also suggests, that it's the failure to recognize the sameness between same-sex and cross-sex couples and same-sex and cross-sex marriages that harms kids. To not recognize that parents are equal to one another, regardless of whether they're in a cross-sex or a same-sex couple, harms and can even humiliate children. And so there's a new era, a kind of new mindset in constitutional doctrine that makes the arguments that are being described here, I think, harder certainly than they used to be to imagine them prevailing in the courts. They certainly didn't prevail in Judge Black's opinions.
If I can, Mark, and I appreciate you actually bringing up Windsor, because that it's interesting you mentioned that it being kind of a new thought on that, because approaching Windsor this way actually is kind of turning Windsor on its head by saying that the Constitution would require recognition of same-sex marriage. In fact, actually, Windsor goes the exact opposite direction. It says federal government has no authority on the subject of marriage. That's in Section 133. It's right around lines 2691. And it says, again, no authority on the subject of marriage. That's what the federal government has. The states actually hold the authority on marriage and actually defining it and defining it individually in each state.
So my understanding, and here I think, Charles, we can probably just agree to disagree.
Okay.
big surprise. But on this one, I actually think, you know, I understand the states' rights argument, which I really hear you making sort of right. In between the lines on this. But what I would say about that is the court's decision in Windsor is grounded pretty squarely in equality principles and equal protection principles. And those equal protection principles apply not only to the federal government, but also to the states. To the extent that there's suggestions, including in Chief Justice Roberts' separate opinion in Windsor, that the majority's opinion in Windsor is really about the distinctiveness of the federal government and its obligations to recognize lawful same-sex marriages, one could distinguish between that ruling and the cases that have been in front of Judge Black. But the majority opinion in Windsor says that it's not, when it comes to it, it says it's not necessary for us to decide, this on federalism grounds, and rests its decision on equal protection principles, which are equally applicable to the states, even arguably more powerfully applicable along different dimensions.
And Mark, let me ask you on that real quick, and I hope you don't mind.
Not at all.
We're having a good conversation here. The rationally related aspect that comes with with the aspect of the equal protection part. Mm-hmm. And it really comes down to the question of excluding same-sex couples is kind of how this has been put forward. And really, it seems that when you're asking the rationally related question, it's whether an opposite-sex definition of marriage actually is a further legitimate interest of the state in some way that it would not otherwise be furthered by allowing same-sex couples to marry. Okay? Is there some state interest that requires the state, you know, to continue furthering, or state interest be furthered? I'm saying it incorrectly now. Sorry. Let me back up. The question is whether an opposite-sex definition of marriage furthers legitimate interest that would not be furthered or furthered to the same degree by allowing same-sex couples to marry. That's really the rational basis question that comes into play when you start talking about equal protection being applied to the case of marriage in Ohio.
Why does it have to be a state interest?
So the way that the case is structured, the state is in a position in the cases where it's being asked to defend the law as it exists, which excludes same-sex couples both from marriage initially under Ohio law and also in the recognition cases. Mm-hmm. And so the cases are asking the state to defend that exclusion, to put the state to the test. And so the state then comes forward once it's decided that there's a real equal protection concern or other rights involved. Then the state has to come forward with its justifications. And both Windsor and now more recently Judge Black say in different ways that the reasons that are being offered in support of the exclusion of same-sex couples from recognition under here now Ohio law, like in Windsor under federal law, just don't hold up. They're not good enough reasons. They're not strong enough reasons in constitutional terms.
William in Chillicothe, you're on the air. You're welcome to the show.
Well, thank you. I was going to ask Mr. Castle a question. I know that we're concerned about marriage and traditional marriage. Why doesn't his group focus more on divorce? I mean, 50% of us get divorced. I don't think divorce is good for marriage. Why don't we just ban divorce also?
Well, it has been banned in the past in some places, but Charles Tassel, go ahead.
Look, minimizing divorce is good for the whole country. And have no opposition to ways that we can increase it, the difficulties for divorce. However, there are recognitions that, if you'll forgive me, a biblical passage here, that Christ even says, you know, because of the hardness of our hearts, there's an allowance for divorce. And especially in cases of domestic violence and such, I don't think we want to take divorce off the table. That is a natural process of our society that we need as an outlet. Now, having said that, minimizing it to the extent at all possible is best for all involved.
Thank you, William. Charles Tassel, I have a few emails directed toward you. I wanted to get to at least one of them. An email from Mark in Gahanna. He says, your Cincinnati guest sounds like he is against adoption in any form. He indicated that children do best with a biological male and a biological female parent. Do you want to address that?
Sure. That's actually something that's been brought up, and it's kind of sitting in the wings on this issue as we look at marriage. Biological parents are the best. That is, like I said, that's the gold standard. Adoption, let me tell you, I've got a girl that was just adopted in our church. Her mother is off on heroin. And I hate to say lost, but I'm pretty sure she is at this point. And it's a terrible thing. But in this case, you've got loving parents that are stepping in to help out. That is a better situation than allowing the child to, wander, go into foster care, go off into, and that's not to denigrate foster care. But having an adoptive situation is a good thing. So in that sense, no, not against adoption. In fact, there's more children that need adoption. I encourage people to participate in that.
Including gay couples.
That's a different situation, and I think we're still going to be looking at that for years to come.
Charles Tassel, thank you so much for joining us today. I really appreciate it.
You're very welcome. Thank you, Ann. Thank you, Mark.
Nice to meet you.
Charles Tassel, he is assistant to the president of Citizens for Community Values. That's the organization that led the charge for the voter-approved ballot issue that banned same-sex marriage in Ohio in 2004. This is All Sides with Ann Fisher on 89.7 NPR News. Welcome back to All Sides. I'm Ann Fisher. It's doubtful now that Ohio voters would get to get a chance in November to reconsider the state's constitutional amendment banning gay marriage. But in recent months, federal judges have struck down same-sex marriage bans in five states: Utah, Oklahoma, Texas, Virginia, and Michigan. We've been talking about recent marriage related rulings today. Still with us in the studio is OSU Law Professor Mark Spindelman. Joining us by phone from New York is Deputy Legal Director for Lamba Legal, Haley Gorenberg. Welcome, Haley.
Thank you very much. It's great to be here.
Lamba Legal, it's the oldest and largest national legal organization working for the civil rights of lesbians, gay men, bisexuals, and transgender people. Has there ever been a comparable period of progress like the one that we're in right now, perhaps, that began with the abolishment of Don't Ask, Don't Tell in the military? I'm not sure.
This is just an astounding period of progress. It is remarkable, and it's something we've needed for a long time.
In recent months, federal judges, as I said, have struck down same-sex marriage bans in five states. Those cases are either under appeal or are about to be appealed. Which are the most important in terms of other states?
It's a challenge to rank them. I mean, we have immense momentum here with marriage bans, both state constitutional bans, state laws, and on the federal level, falling in succession over a period of months. And I think that, for instance, some of the most interesting to me, I would say, are the ones where judges have really grappled with the question of whether there should even be a stay once the ban is struck down pending appeal, because I think that the evidence is mounting and clear and just uncontroverted now that the harm to families when they can't immediately marry when they need to is damaging each day it continues. So some of these cases where the judges are looking at the question of whether a stay, whether implementation or allowing people to marry should happen immediately, or the case should play out to the very last jot, and really grappling with the harms to families, those to me are very interesting, but really it's all part of the national movement to equality.
Bruce in Pickerington, you're on the air. Welcome, Bruce.
Good morning, Ann, and good morning to your panelists.
Morning.
I wanted to bring up the question of to either Ms. Gorenberg or to the professor, how they view Loving versus Virginia, the case that was decided by the Supreme Court that overturned the interracial marriage question, as compared to the decisions that Judge Black and the other federal district courts have made related to the same-sex marriage issue. I know it was a fairly large component of the U.S. versus Windsor case, and I was wondering if they could kind of pull from that to compare and contrast some of the similarities of, you know, you had the states that were, you know, many of the southern states that were outlawing interracial marriage, either by act of the legislatures or by votes of the people. And now you have this similar case where same-sex marriage has been brought onto the table, you know, again, being restricted by votes of the legislature or votes of the people. And I wonder if they could just touch on that briefly to kind of compare those two situations.
And just to piggyback on that, a big difference is that public sentiment is becoming much more positive toward same-sex marriage rights, whereas in 1967, when Loving versus Virginia was decided, that was not the case. Haley Gorenberg?
That's absolutely true. And to step away from the law for just a second and look at that public sentiment and think about what drives change so quickly, I would say that one distinction between race discrimination and discrimination based on sexual orientation is that people, especially when they're discriminated against, can be segregated by race in society pretty extensively. And in contrast, when you look at sexual orientation, suddenly families may find out a brother, a sister, mother, father, child, someone very close to them has a different sexual orientation than they do. Someone's gay, and they didn't have to think about that before. And they're not removed from that person. That's somebody that they love and come to accept. And the fact that people are coming out of the closet and that folks in all strata of society and all communities suddenly realize someone I really love is gay and discriminated against in a terrible way. I think that that really helps to propel change more quickly because people are encountering that in their own personal lives. Loving versus Virginia, a marvelous legal precedent. We absolutely draw from it. There are many parallels in these movements for civil rights, although the histories are very different and there are certainly distinctions. There are these sort of core legal principles about what it means for people to be walled out of an institution based on an aspect of their personal identity and whether that can be legitimate, that obviously, you know, is really significant. And I would point to, interestingly, I think the government in Virginia standing down to a certain extent, saying, you know, we're not going to defend this, and pointing out we've been on the wrong side in marriage discrimination before, and specifically pointing at Loving and saying essentially to the public and to the people of Virginia, let's not do that again. Let's be on the right side of history this time.
Okay. Thanks a lot, Bruce. I read the assessment by one legal expert that most polls show that a rapidly growing majority of Americans support same-sex marriage and that change in public sentiment will not be ignored by the judiciary. And I wondered, what is the role of the judiciary? Is it to reflect public sentiment? Mark Spindleman?
Well, there are various theories of how it is that the Supreme Court and courts should go about reading and interpreting the Constitution and making it mean. One view, which one can either accept and try to explain and justify or criticize, is that there's a correspondence between, in a sense, the informed or durable consensus of the American public and the rules that the Supreme Court lays down. So one way of understanding what's happened in Windsor is that the Supreme Court has laid down this rule and is now seeing, in a sense, sort of having taken a sort of having issued a very important and historic ruling, is now seeing what opposition there is, how views might be changing, and how the national consensus may be expanding in favor of marriage equality. Certainly, there's reason to think that it has, that the Supreme Court's decision has helped shape and expand the consensus around the claims for marriage equality. And that's a reason, if the Constitution is a constitution of we the people, to have the views of we the people in that sense reflected in the rules that the Supreme Court announces.
Haley?
Well, I do agree with Professor Spindleman. I would add that as a civil rights litigator, we look to the Constitution and to the judiciary, that one of the three branches of government, and we look to that branch and the use of and interpretation of the Constitution to say this is an important counterbalance to majority rules. So it is fantastic that public opinion is changing and that we have momentum, and this is all wonderful, but the judiciary interpreting the Constitution is where we go when we need to protect. And it's a core value of, you know, founding America, when we need to protect people who don't have 51% on their side. The Constitution is supposed to be used to protect those folks and to say you are not always at the mercy of what the majority thinks, and that we think that there is a respect for the rights of individuals that needs to be upheld, these sort of core fundamental values about what people need to live life and pursue happiness, and that the Constitution is going to protect them even when the majority is not for their rights and they're not as popular as some other people might be. And I think that we all want to know that we could turn to the courts if we had to and to the protections of the Constitution to protect us even if we were unpopular and didn't have the majority for us.
Rich in Columbus, you're on the air. Hi, Rich.
Hi, you guys were just touching on something I wanted to talk about, and it's kind of the evolving and changing zeitgeist of our society. And at one point, it was considered a valid political opinion that women shouldn't be able to vote, that, like you mentioned, interracial couples should not be allowed to marry. At one point, supporting the Jim Crow laws was considered a valid political point. And I guess my question is, at what point do we stop viewing those opposed to gay marriage as that being a valid political position and just call them what they are, bigots? I'm already there myself. So thank you.
Mark Spindleman.
So this is a great and a very important question. Part of what I was trying to suggest in the exchange with Charles before was that there's been an important shift not only in popular public attitudes around and for same-sex marriage, but also in and on the terrain of constitutional law. Arguments that once would have carried the day, arguments from procreation, are now from and around children, no longer have the power that they did in court decisions. Judge Black's opinion is a reflection of this. Windsor is a reflection of this. And opposition to same-sex marriage is no longer regarded as broadly as it once was in doctrine as reasonable, commonsensical, appropriate, and permissible. So there's been an important change not only in popular attitudes, but also in the views and principles of constitutional law that courts have been laying down and sharpening over time.
And Haley Gorenberg, did you want to address that?
Well, I'm not interested in calling anybody names, but I am interested in confronting folks who are discriminating and bringing to light to them the stories of, call it family values, harmed families, protection of children, all of these different things, and how marriage equality and allowing people to be protected to take care of the people that they love most, their partner, their children, there are federal benefits that affect their parents. I mean, all of these things. To just really sort of talk about the facts and the impacts of the discrimination. And we've gone in these last few years from a point where it was questioned whether children of the couples we represented could be plaintiffs in our cases to where it is accepted because we're showing the harm when families, including children, aren't allowed to enter into marriage. When the parents aren't allowed to enter into marriage, everybody is suffering. And I think to confront some of these folks who are bandying around this idea that, you know, this is best for children or whatever, with the actual facts of the impact on families and children of ongoing government discrimination, to me, that's the best antidote. I mean, what are you going to say to that? And it's moving the judges as it should, and it's moving society as well. And it's because the facts speak. And the discrimination at this point, I feel like it's, look, the emperor has no clothes. I mean, there's just nothing compelling that the government has been able to say about why discrimination against these families makes sense. And it's just become absolutely transparent for everybody to see, to the point where even the defendants, the people who were, you know, the government representatives, are moving themselves over to the, what we call the other side of the V, you know, us versus whoever the defendants are. There are government officials who are saying, no, this is indefensible. Like, I won't be on the other side of the V. I agree. I acquiesce. It's just clear for everybody to see. So bringing out all of those facts about, you know, what it means to be in an urgent medical situation, what it means if you have to take medical leave, what it means if a partner is incapacitated and, you know, who's going to take care of the children. Or, I mean, just scenario after scenario of specific facts of what the institution of marriage means in bad times when people are suffering tragedies and danger to their families, as well as the good, wonderful times when you want to honor and dignify the relationship and have a celebration. Hmm. Bringing all this forward is what we need, and I think that the, you know, discrimination or bigotry, whatever you call it, on the other side falls before the fact.
Haley Gorenberg, thank you for joining us today. Appreciate it.
Thank you. It was great to be here.
Haley Gornberg, she's the Deputy Legal Director for Lamba Legal. And Mark Spindleman, OSU Law Professor, as always, thanks for joining us, Mark.
Thank you for having me, Ann.
Thanks for listening. This is All Sides with Ann Fisher on 89.7 NPR News.